96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and this is Guardian AM. Today, we want to have ourselves a discussion really aligned to the budget. We know that the Prime Minister is currently leading, opening the sectoral debate, so to speak. And I wanted to kind of get a vibe, a feedback from you as to exactly how you see it. I know that there's been numerous amount of discussion. There has been a lot written about this particular budget, but exactly how do you see it? Let's take your perspective. Maybe we can have a different perspective on some of the things which have already been discussed. And so if you want to join us early into the show, really. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4259, 325-4316. And the text line is 422-4796. We're anxious to hear from you. And so the question I have today is, you know, how did you find the budget? How did you find the budget? What exactly about the budget excited you? Is there anything about the budget in which you were very disappointed? The question is, did the government get it right? Given the multiplicity of issues which it is faced with, did the government get it right? Are we in the commentary space? Are we given sufficient credit to what was done? Are we sufficiently respecting the complexities that were involved in kind of, you know, coming up with a budget because of, you know, largely the environment, the pandemic, the inflation, COVID rising? Are we given that sufficient credit, or, you know, have the discussion so far been fair, balanced, and objective? What exactly is your take on this particular budget? And then we're going to take a look at this Moody's statement, because I find the Moody's statement to be a very, very interesting one. Interesting in that there's some things which were said which I generally anticipated that Moody would have said, or any rating agency speaking back to the budget would raise. Those for me were natural kind of a mention. What may be slightly different in my view, and based on reports I've read, I've seen a couple of reports, one at least coming out of the Caribbean region, is the way the Moody's report has been reported on. In that it is, I think the various news organizations have led with the risks rather than using the risk as the qualifying element, and consequently the messaging. I think the messaging has changed slightly, or changed sufficiently, depending on how you want to cast it, such that it may give the impression that Moody's may have said something which I don't believe that they said. And it also could leave us walking away from that statement without really pinpointing an important aspect or important aspects of what was said. So we want to hear from you. We really want to hear from you as it relates to these particular issues. But there are some other things which I want to draw your attention to as it relates to this budget again. And that is really how, for my part mostly, I seek to analyze and assess the budget or any particular statement which has been made, and I wish to opine on it. We often kind of rush into the numbers. And I know that that is the popular thing to do, and sometimes the more exciting thing to do, depending on who you are and the kind of message you want to communicate. Sometimes it is the era which is most emotive, and so persons go to that. So last year the number was 100, this year it's cut to 50, it's a 50% decrease. What is going to happen? Last year the number was only 50, now it's 100, it's going in the wrong direction. Why are they doing this? But how often do we step back and really seek to understand where it is that the government or the administration making the presentation is actually coming from? And I'm not saying that we are going to be in agreement, but where exactly are they coming from? What is it that is informing their discussion? What is it that is informing this budget? And so that we can understand, or at least have a better appreciation as to why they do some of what they do, because oftentimes without that appreciation, some things just look kind of out of whack. Again, I'm not making a point that you will agree. Certainly, there always are going to be questions. There are going to be things said, and we are saying, you know, should that be done at this point in time? Is that the correct thing to do? Is that sufficient? Is that too much? These are natural questions which are going to emanate out of this discussion process, whether you're having it with someone, a group of person, or you're just reflecting on it by yourself. But it's certainly very, very important to look at what we are dealing with. And I find that reading the or listening to the early segments of any prime minister's presentation gives you a very, very good idea of where he is going. Well, so far we have only had male prime ministers. Where he is going or where the administration thinking rests. And so when you go back to the prime minister's presentation of May 25th, he said a couple of things which I think are very, very important to take into consideration as foundational to any analysis which you may wish to undertake. It says, firstly, this budget, for me, firstly, I think this budget is highly reflective, and the prime minister said so, of points outlined in our blueprint for change, that is the PLP's manifesto going into the election. That's a 10-point document, covered a number of issues. And as the Prime Minister put it, the 10-point framework is to recover, rebuild, you ultimately revolutionize the economy. And there are three eras which I believe dominantly jump out. Three eras. In going back to the blueprint for change, three eras which I think jump out in this particular budget presentation. The first is compassionate social relief and strengthened security. I think that that is very, very clear in the budget presentation. If you look at the narrative or you look at the number. Now, there's some persons who are arguing that the social services amounts have been cut and so on, and that's true. But if you look at the totality of the budget, the entire thing, not just those which would be going directly to social service payments and reliefs and aids to individuals, but the totality, the total impact, which I refer to as social support, the reduction in underlying tariffs, the opportunities for home ownership and so on and so forth. If you look at that, I think it falls really into this whole idea of social relief. A plan for each island, you would have seen where the government is at least thinking in that direction. I listened to Shivagaling recently, and he raised this very interesting position as to whether or not Family islands are net payers or net takers as far as taxation is concerned. But the idea of creating funds, however we want to rationalize where the funds come from, the idea of creating funds, which are going to be earmarked for productive investments in these family islands, I think is a positive thing. And this speaks to it. And then it also talks about Bahamian empowerment. Again, we see through discussion about the role of Bahamas Development Bank, the opportunity for first-time owners to get rebates on value-added tax, an increase in value-added tax on purchase of first ownership, moving from, I think, 250 to 300,000. These are things which I believe fit perfectly into these points coming from the Blueprint for Change. What is the larger point I'm making here? It is that the Prime Minister presented an argument, a narrative, which is not a new argument. It's not a new narrative, but it is certainly an extension on a conversation which was had with the Bahamian public prior to the election. An argument which one could argue, even though, you know, it's a majority win first past the post type of arrangement we have, but it's an argument and an arrangement which we could easily say or fairly say that the Bahamian public agreed to by electing the party to become the government. And so they're building on this and they're extending this out in a way which is consistent with what they say they would have done. Now, as we look at the budget itself, the Prime Minister outlined a couple of priorities, which I think is very, very, very important for us to bear in mind as we look through the budget itself. So what are the priorities? What are the priorities which the government outlined, the Prime Minister outlined in his budget? And the priorities are important from my perspective because it basically said in this document, in this presentation I'm going to give to you today, in everything else which comes in terms of the sectoral debate, the true north, our true north will be reflected by these very items. And these three priorities are one, and I'm paraphrasing to some extent, one is to put us firmly on course to continue to rescue the economy. So the Prime Minister sees all of the things which are outlined in the budget as being enablers, facilitators for the continued rescuing of the economy. If you listen to the presentation very clearly and you listen to what he had to say in Parliament just now, you would walk away with the conclusion or the impression that the Prime Minister believes that they're well on their way to creating that foundation. So that's the first priority. The second priority is to help us navigate some of the new challenges facing the global economy. So what are some of these challenges? Inflation, disruption of supply chain, which of course affect inflation. There is the war out there, which is affecting inflation and cost of goods and cost of oil. There are, you know, upticks in COVID cases. So that too is an issue. The pandemic was kind of pulling back, but those are issues. Then there is the fight against inflation by developed countries. For us, our reference point is the United States and the fact that they are increasing interest rate in order to do this. And we consider the impact and the implication that this have for the cost of debt and also the potential for slowing down the global economy and pushing us into a potential recession. So it speaks to that. And then the third one is to maximize the opportunities and deliver the growth necessary to support national development. Why I think these three priorities are so important? Because if you look at them very closely, the one thing you will walk away with, or you must walk away with if you objectively assess this, is that the administration, the prime minister, understands and accepts that there is a very, very urgent need to rescue the economy. So that is known. So everything that we read or hear from him subsequently, we can then come back to this benchmark and ask ourselves the question, is this consistent with his stated knowledge of the need to rescue the economy? And that's kind of, oh, I go through these things. You need basis, you need benchmark, you need guardrails, really, to kind of put into context the numbers. So if we are rescuing the economy, would we take dramatic decision now, which in our view, I'm not saying everyone is in agreement with it, but would we take some decisions now, today, which might eventually harm, at least in the short term, the economy? And so a decision to not go in a particular direction, which may seem on the face of it, not easily explained or not easily understood, when we look at the priorities, may make a difference. We understand, looking at these three priorities, that the prime minister, the administration, and the government understands and acknowledges the headwinds that we are facing and the fact that these headwinds are global in nature. In other words, they are external to us, and for the most part, there is not much that we can do about them except in our strategy and our choosing of response to the various effects. So as I listen to discussions around inflation, for example, we become challenged with grappling with this because oftentimes we don't start from a place of, total transparency. And the total transparency is this, from my perspective, is that the government pretty much can't do anything about inflation except to the extent where it has a policy treatment which affects the cost of those goods, and it can choose to reduce or totally eliminate that. So at a maximum, if milk is coming in and the price of milk has increased as a result of inflation, the inflationary effect on the costs coming into the country, the government can't do anything about that. From the point of the border, from the point of that milk hitting the border with tariffs and duties and value-added tax and so on and so forth, the government can act. So the government can reduce the VAT to zero on that particular item, take away all the duties, take away all the fees and charges, and make sure that the goods, therefore, come into the Bahamian public, into the Bahamian space, as cheaply as possible. But whatsoever cost has already been impacted outside the Bahamas, there's nothing the government can do about it. And I think oftentimes we kind of pretend, administrations included, that more can be done than that. Yes, there's always moral suasion. We can talk to various business owners. We can talk to associations and so on. And those may have their effect. But for the most part, except for giving up the revenue, there's not much more that can be done. And the process of giving up the revenue have to be balanced against other larger macro priorities. Because when you give up that revenue, you potentially put your deficit at risk, or at least you run the chance of increasing your deficit, reducing revenue. You may have to cut spending in certain other areas. So there's always going to be a trade-off. It's not always going to be a straightforward walk in the park. And then the final aspect of these three priorities, which I want to draw to your attention, and I think this one is very, very, very important, or at least very pivotal in our analysis, is that the three main priorities, all the priorities listed in this particular budget, is extremely people-centric. What do I mean by that? When you look at what is being said, when you look at how the things are being proposed for change, it's designed to mostly affect the individual. So the cuts on tariffs, I believe, is a counterbalance to the desire not to change the value-added tax discussion, which has been percolating for a while. There's no desire to do that, and so we cut on one side. And the expectation is that, you know, I would believe that the expectation is that this inflationary period is not going to last forever. And so are these permanent changes, or are they going to be reverted once the path is clear? I don't know. I can't speak to that. What I observe, or at least my conclusion, is that these things are significantly people-centric. And because the priorities noted by the Prime Minister are people-centric, we should therefore, when we get into the numbers, when we get into the fullness of the budget, we should start to expect to see spending or cuts or movement or policy shifts which are designed to impact the individual. And that is largely the thesis of this budget. Does that particular conclusion or that reality has some tensions with some of the more macro challenges that we have some tensions with the state of the debt, with the extent to which the Bahamas debt is trading currently? Does it have some tensions where persons believe that more need to be done in the era of taxation or new taxation? Yes, potentially. There always are going to be tension. But remember that at the end of the day, the budget is really a balancing act. Yeah? It's really a balancing position. And so decisions are being made. Should we go left or should we go right? To what extent should we go right, having decided that right is the direction that we want to take? How much should we do now? How much should we look at for next year, and so on and so forth? And so when we consider these things, I think we start to have, or at least put ourselves in a better position of having, I think, a little bit more deep understanding of exactly where the budget is. Because I will agree with you readily that this budget, while it is like any other budget, a prediction of revenue and expenditure with an emphasis on projections, because this is not what has been done, but what is expected to be done. While it is that, and we shouldn't go over-romanticizing on a particular budget exercise, we must recognize that this is a outplay, a putting in words, a putting in numbers of the government policy positions, of the government thinking, of the government leaning, of the direction the government wishes to go. And so when you look at the budget, not just the one for this year, but you have to look at the projection for 2024, 2025 in tandem to get an idea and to glean value as to how it will impact the lives of us, how it will impact persons on external to the country looking in, how it will impact lenders, how it will impact foreign direct investment, how it will kind of steer the country. Because, you know, this is where the captain stands in the captain space and shouts to the rest of the ship, this is where we're heading, and this is how we're going to head there. So in the instance where things are fully okay, then that's fine. We don't have to worry about that. Where something may not be sufficient, then obviously we'll have to make allowances. We'll have to be creative. We'll have to change something. But in the fullness of things, the question still stands. Having chosen these priorities, having looked at the issues which are there, did they get it right? Are they going in the right direction? And the extent to which other pronouncement on the budget may have been misconstrued, or was it misconstrued? Did the persons who report on it get it right? Did Moody's actually take a view of the budget which was pessimistic? Is that the true case? Well, that's something we'll talk about on the other side of the break, and we ask you to join us. Again, the numbers are 323-6232, 325-4259, 325-4316, our text line 422-4796. You're listening to Guardian AM. Don't move. Come right back.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding lives. By knowing what actions you should take to reduce the effects of hurricane disaster, get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, surge protectors, essential supplies, plus so much more before the storm, after the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, which auto shop to go to after driving through flooded streets, and more. The Nassau Guardian's Hurricane Guide will help to make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity, plus 15 radio commercials. Contact us today, 302-2300, or your account executives. Will you be prepared?
A local paper in Grand Bahama is back every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We're having a conversation around the budget and kind of just laying out a way. Well, it's actually more so the way I approach it. Obviously, that's not the only way. But I'm just trying to kind of lay down some foundational issues that we should really consider in when we look at the budget. And so, you know, a lot of times we hear conversation like anybody else. I'm going to say things which you might not agree with. You're going to say some things which I believe maybe you should have said differently. How do you kind of look at some things in a different manner? And that's kind of how these things work. It's never absolute wrong or right, because we're talking about somebody's estimate and things which are projected to happen. We don't know what will happen in the long run. However, when we have a organization as influential as Moody's, as a rating agency, speak to the budget, then obviously we have to pay attention to that. I think we should. And so when persons respond to it, or when persons take the information and run with it, it's understandable. Because here is an authority, here is an entity which is responsible for the credit rating of the Bahamas, actually provides credit rating, and it is making some pronouncement given, and it's also doing that in proximity to the budget, having made some other pronouncement or some earlier pronouncement during the midterm budget itself, or the midterm presentation. So before we get into the mood is okay. We have a call. Okay, caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian AM. Caller, go ahead. Okay, the caller is gone. Sorry about that. You can come right back and we will be glad to hear from you. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. We know that economics is an unpredictable and has made the most educated of us look silly, especially with so many variables to consider. The Bahamas, for the most part, with all things considered, have done a tremendous job in keeping this country afloat. So expect for our government to get everything right, to cover every issue and concern for that a few detractors may have, is a total waste of time. Well, if you put it like that, then certainly your statement would be true. To expect the government to get every single thing right. When I ask if the government got it right, I'm talking in general terms. Not, there's absolutely no way to get every single thing right in such a way where you're going to satisfy every single constituent and every single stakeholder. It's not possible. Because again, because there are trade-offs, and they're going to be trade-offs which impact different interests and different outlooks. At the end of the day, somebody is going to say, well, you know, my interest wasn't served in this instance, and so I'm going to be upset about it. The other person is going to say, well, we did better than expected, and so this is glorious. This is the best thing that has ever happened. And so, you know, in these things, there's always going to be that part type of a situation, Dexter. So I agree with you the way you put it, which is extreme. But if we speak about it in generalized terms, like, you know, is this moving us in the right direction? Did we get that right? Then the answer to that could be a yes or a no. Not whether or not we satisfy every single person in the 350 or 400,000 individuals who occupy the Bahamas. So before the Moody's document came out, I had a bit of a commentary on the budget. It was carried in the newspaper the following day, right after the budget. And I said a couple of things, which I want to repeat here, that one, I believe that the budget presentation represents a very complexly weaved story, indicative of the delicate challenges that the country is faced with. So that was my first kind of observation from the top. Listening to the budget, usually when you listen to a budget presentation, you get these very, very high cliffs and maybe low valleys. This one was, I think, a little bit smoother in terms of the variation between the highs and the lows. And consequently, it became a little bit more challenging to easily pick out the items, if I can put it that way. And so I recognize that it was largely because there was this dance, if you will, this balancing which was taking place between, you know, what is and what should be. I'm doing this based on a compassionate, the words that the Prime Minister used very, very often in his discourse, when he talks about economic dignity, compassion, compassionate leadership. He talks a lot about equality. He talks about how to make the economy more inclusive, how to bring people up. So you know that these are the things which are guiding him towards whatsoever the ultimate decisions are. And so it was really a very complex story being put together. The overall budget, I believe, was excellent in social support. I made that, and by social support, I refer to benefits which would inure to individuals. So if you reduce the duty on sugar, and if you move that from 5% to 0%, then there is a benefit coming directly to me, to you. I think overall, when you take all of the things which were done in totality, I think that was what was excellent, and it moved in the direction of supporting, especially, you know, segment of the population, vulnerable segment of the population. Put it that way. I then went on to point that, however, there are some tensions between doing that and some of the other things which exist. We have a caller. Caller, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Hi, good morning.
You know, did I hear you say Moody's?
I did say Moody's, yeah.
I have a little issue with them.
What issue do you have with them?
About 4 years ago, I have some documents here to support what I say. They said they tend to agree with Standard & Poor's on the rating of the Bahamas. Do you remember?
Uh-huh. They tend to agree?
In this one instance, when Standard & Poor's downgraded the Bahamas, Moody's came out the next day and said that they tend to agree with Standard & Poor's assessment of the Bahamas. Got the two articles here. Can bring them to the studio later. And then I started wondering. Standard & Poor's, under Barack Obama, was convicted of such a heinous crime, misleading on Fannie and Freddie. They were charged $1.5 billion. You remember that?
Yep.
Great. And if Moody's is agreeing with known convicted criminals, Standard & Poor's, according to Barack Obama administration, why would I want Standard & Poor's or Moody's to ever talk about me again? See, I had asked them, did they assess my country? In other words, you have to, I can't say you're worthless. I have to find out if you have life or key property, if you have a home, if you have other assets, then I can grade you. Have they ever graded us? Do we have oil potential? Do we have sand? How much sand? How much aragonite? They've never graded us to downgrade
Graham, I just want to ask one more question.
So,
Have you ever read a Moody's report on the Bahamas?
I've read both of their reports on the Bahamas, but I can't accept what convicted criminals or people who agree with them have to say about me. See, the IMF, you know them, and the World Bank, they said in 2021, and I have the document, that we are the third richest country in the hemisphere. That's the U.S., North America, Canada, South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and us in the Atlantic. So how is it the IMF can say, and the World Bank can say, we're the third richest country in the hemisphere, U.S., Canada, Bahamas, GDP per capita. And then other credit rating agencies that are known convicted criminals and their friends that agree with them say different. And then we curtail. I can leave you with this one. How come we've never balanced the budget? No budget is good unless it's balanced. Do you agree? You and your wife can't be making $800 a week and spending $1,000 on rent and food, etc. That never works out, correct?
No, so, but we're not talking about me and my wife. We're talking about a nation.
And the same applies to a nation, to a business. If your budget is not balanced as a nation, where do you end up, Mr. Edwards, if your budget isn't balanced as a nation?
These are sensible business questions
that could never be answered correctly.
Okay, thank you so much for your contribution. You end by saying these are questions which are can never be answered correctly because to be honest, then you talk nice, you put words together, but they're not elegant questions. They're honestly not elegant questions. And I suspect, knowing who you are, is that you are better informed than the extent to which the question demonstrates. I think to some extent, and which is one of the things which I find sometimes to be dangerous or to be challenging, is that individuals ask questions in ways which are designed to elicit a particular response. So when we say the IMF and the World Bank says that we are the richest in the region, but other rating agencies, in the first instance, neither of those are rating agencies. And all they're simply doing is taking GDP divided by the number of individuals in the country and saying, well, that's your GDP per capita. Now, that does not necessarily translate to the state of your debt, the state of your fiscal circumstances, whether or not you're running deficit or not. So to conflate the two issues is either a lack of understanding or an attempt to mislead. And we should not do that. We ought not to do that. I think we need to understand and have our discussion really based on the reality. So going back to Moody's. So Moody's said it accepted Standard and Poor. Now you say you have the report to prove that. My position would be that Moody's is a rating agency and Standard and Poor is a rating agency. And given their status in the world, they're both going to do their own analysis and not necessarily stand on. another one. Now, if they happen to do the analysis and come to the same agreement and based on whatever rationale they use, then of course, if making that statement. But I think we lose ourselves if we start to having this conversation about the Bahamas being the richest country in the world or the richest country in the hemisphere, because that doesn't solve our $10.5 or $11 billion in debt. If we start talking about the richness of the Bahamas, and of course that comes with certain disadvantage, we can get certain grants and so on and so forth, but that doesn't help the level at which the debt is trading on the market at the moment. So we have to be very careful about that. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing today, sir?
I am doing fantastic, and you?
All right, it's a very interesting topic that we have here today, you know? I want to piggyback off what Graham said a little while ago. Per capita income. The problem is that we're not taxing the people who are making these high incomes. There are certain party went into power and he negotiated the non-tax and non-VAT putting on a certain industry or certain entities, and that is our problem. We're taxing the hell out of the poor. That per capita income has no value in the Bahamas because of that situation. Now, another situation is that 500 acres they claim of forestry has been cut down in the Kamaikaloa area. I put this to you. Bahamians are finally waking up and try to sustain themselves and try to do some type of agriculture in their country and try to get the possession of the land. My thing is, don't discourage Bahamians. They're finally waking up and they finally see the need for agriculture and finally see the need of sustaining and growing our own food. The pandemic actually flushed out how big of a problem we have. Do not discourage the Bahamians. Try as much as you can to help them out in their ventures. It's a simple fact that they already started. It means that they have a mindset shift. And we have to shift this mindset in order for the Bahamas to become a viable country. We cannot go on like this. It is impossible to survive like this. We need all hands on deck.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Thank you for voicing for allowing me to voice my true honest opinion about our country and where it's going right now.
Yes, and I thank you for calling in and contributing. And you're so right. This idea of using a measure, the GDP per capita, is very, very deceptive. I mean, there are many persons who don't make $12,000 a year in this country. There are many persons who live below the poverty line. But when we do that, we realize that there's an average, we're working out an average. And so the connection between the two, you know, if you, Mr. Weatherford, is making $100,000 and I am making $10, it's $100,000 and $10. They're going to divide that and suggest that per capita, if only the two of us exist in the world, that my per capita income is $50,500 or $55,000 or whatever the number is, which would be so far away from what the truth is. So we have to be careful with that. We also have to be careful with how we generalize. I honestly think that individuals who are looked up to, and I know many persons look up to you and gravitate to you for information, you have to take onto yourself a certain level of responsibility to be more objective in your discourse, not to produce information or send information out, which is likely to mislead persons who do not have the ability to discern. I think you have that obligation. Just like anyone who sits before these mics have that overt obligation to be honest, to be fair, to be objective, and to the extent that we are not, we're failing. So before we get into the end, I just want to take you through very quickly the points I was making on my view on the budget. So I think that there is some tensions which are going to be there. What do I mean by that? In order to support these vulnerable population, in order to cushion the impact of the impact for inflation, you're going to spend in areas which you would not otherwise would have wanted to spend, and so it will impact other areas. I also believe that the budget represents a delicate balancing created by the inflationary environment. And so when we get to the point where if the economy should start to, the global economy that is, should start to see a downturn in inflation, then we're going to realize that some of the local performance in revenue was driven, is driven by inflation, and that could go away. And so the government is really taking some risk on some of these things here, but does so in the context of its three outline priorities. And then finally, the budget presentation I stated then needed a fuller discussion around the debt and debt management. And I stated that to be maybe one of the most significant area of risk to the achievement or the overall plans of the government. So what did Moody's say when it represented its own statement? Well, Moody's looked at what was happening and says that the strong pace of economic recovery supports the government projections for a faster fiscal consolidation than a year ago. And this is credit positive. Basically, they're saying the rate at which the country is recovering is consistent with the projections made by the government. It supports it. And this is a change because 1 year ago, this wasn't the case. But importantly, it says there, this is a credit positive. So as a rating agency looking at this reality, they're saying this is good for our clients, the people who lend to the Bahamas, which means that the Bahamas is strengthening in its creditworthiness. So this is a positive. It talks about the government reduce its projected fiscal 2022 deficit compared to its estimated to compared to what it estimated it to be in January when it released its medium-term strategy. So basically, in January, the government says the fiscal deficit, I think, was going to terminate at about 7.4%. In this particular year, which is going to end in at the end of this month, June, it is expected to be at 6%. So that's a positive. The government did some more work and resulted in some positive outcome. And there was also a faster decline in the debt to GDP ratio. Remember, we were at 101% at one point in time. Based on where we are now, it's down to maybe, I think, about 87%. And the projection takes it down to around 80 in about 2 years. So Moody's looking at these things and say, good, good. That's a positive thing. And so we should be all right in some way. Well, not all right, but we are moving in the right direction. The 2023 fiscal deficit is expected to come in somewhere at 4%. When we would settle at, everything being equal, we would settle at 6% this year. It's expected to come in at 4% next year. From a credit perspective, that's a good trajectory. It's going down. And then the following year, according to the government projection, we expect it to turn into a small surplus. That would be a positive. So Moody is looking at these things and saying, good, positive, positive, positive. However, are there any risks? Because these are simply just projections. Are there any risks to these projections which have been made? And then it says that a key risk to the budget are overly optimistic revenue collection projection in the absence of concrete measure to broaden the tax base and the inability to manage spending in line with targets. So basically, Moody's saying that the key risk is that the government is depending on enforcement and collection to shore up its revenue. And if that doesn't happen, there is going to be a problem because it decided not to increase taxes. And if it runs into a situation where it has to spend more than projected, it's going to be in trouble. So that is recognized as a risk. It's not saying that that's going to happen, but it's a risk to the projection. It then goes on to speak to the issue of debt. And the environment within which we are currently managing that debt situation. We have another call. Caller, go ahead. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian Radio. No, we don't have a caller. Okay. And so the extent to which we have projected that and we are going into these potential headwinds when it talks about the increase in premium on debt. So basically what he's saying is that the Bahamas have some debt. There's going to be ongoing needs because we have a $700 million deficit for this year. And we're projecting 560 plus for the following year. So there's still going to be borrowing needs. The extent to which it needs that and to the extent to which the cost of debt goes up could potentially mean that some of the projections may be understated. If that then is the case, then expect the deficit to widen. So those are some of the main big issues which Moody's is speaking to, right? One is that we had no taxes, no new taxes, and you know I think most persons were expecting that to be the case. Two, the potential for the increase in the cost of debt and the impact that will have on expenditure. And secondly, thirdly, when it looked at what was projected in terms of spending for 2023 fiscal, and then 2024, it says, if the spending are curtailed within these narrow margins, basically holding them even, if that happens, it has the potential to impact growth, opportunities for growth. And if that happens, if we do not see new growth, then it will have a potential, it will have a detrimental impact on the overall state. If you go back to the priorities stated by the Prime Minister, if you go back to the acknowledged challenge which the Prime Minister laid out, he clearly says that part and parcel of the process going forward is the need to find growth for national development. And so in many ways, Moody's is, in fact, in this instance, my conclusion, you don't have to agree, but my conclusion, Moody's is, in fact, saying we're generally okay with what you have done, given the circumstances, given the environment out there. However, here are three categories of risks that we see, which if materialized, we could see some things happening. And then it reiterated the fact that we already did say that we think that some of the projections are overly optimistic, but of course, they are just projections. So Moody's is not outrightly saying that the government budget is not good, or it don't like it, or it is pessimistic about it. It is saying that these things are consistent with what we are seeing on the ground, faster consolidation. And at the end of the day, though, you must, as a government, as a country, as a people looking on, as lenders, bear in mind that these three categories of risk exist. And if any of them should materialize, if any of them should crystallize, you could see a difference in the underlying outcome of this particular budget. And that's why I say all of that, we need to sometimes go slowly through the narrative and kind of understand exactly what has been said, and then use that to draw the conclusion. Because if you lead with the risk, then obviously you're going to be leading with a pessimistic output. But if you lead from the perspective that something positive was said, but it was qualified, the outcome could be totally different. We're totally out of time, and therefore we just need to say goodbye. We say have a great day. Be careful out there. COVID isn't over. War good, one love, and Ubuntu.